I want to be really practical this morning. I think actually what we've had so far with the questions, they were good questions. They were really, really good questions. And some of the answers weren't too bad either. No, the answers were excellent. And Mike and I are now the two drug dealers. Because we're the opiums. Yeah, we deal with other people's money. So this bit's not being recorded. No, that's okay. Over the last few years, I've been involved with sending out a lot of people on short-term mission trips. Like, you know, people would have gone from our church overseas for a year or 2 years. And I've been involved in helping prepare them to leave what was comfortable, maybe leave a job, maybe leave a secure home environment, and maybe, you know, end up in Africa where life can be very, very frustrating. You know, internet is like here, you know, like works occasionally and whatever. And I mean, the first time I went to Africa was in 1995, and it was my daughter's birthday while I was away from home. And so I traveled 2.5 hours into Kampala with a card I'd written out on a piece of paper before I left. And I found a fax bureau, and I was praying that the fax... Do you remember what faxes... Yeah, you know what faxes are? Good. You know? And I was praying that the fax machine would be working. Because if it wasn't, it was a waste of a trip. So I had to send a fax back from this fax bureau in Kampala to the office stationery shop in our town so that Fiona could go and pick it up and then give it to our daughter on her birthday. Now, you're thinking to yourself, why didn't I leave a card at home? And then Fiona could have given her the card. Well, we did, you know, Fiona did give her a card from both of us, but I wanted her to have something special from me on the day. You know, nowadays we just send a text or a Facebook message or something. But I wanted her to have something from me on the day of her birthday. And to send that piece of communication took a whole day, you know, but it was worth it. And so, you know, over the years I've been involved with sending people out on short-term mission trips and help prepare them for what life is going to be like and the culture shock they're going to experience when they go somewhere. And typically what we found was when people were going away for a year or 2 years, the first 3 months they loved. And then they kind of hit a wall. And it's like stuff starts coming up and they start struggling. So aren't you glad you're going home after 3 months? And, you know, then they'd work through all of that and that's when the culture shock would hit. But what I started to notice was when people came back home after being away for a year or 2 years, we didn't have a framework of helping them. And they came back and we just automatically assumed they would slide back into normal life and everything would be okay. And actually, everything wasn't okay. And people's experience of coming home, the what we call reverse culture shock, was actually harder. That would do. That's a good word. Thank you. It was harder, and it was really tough for some of them. And so I've thought about that a lot. And as I said yesterday, in January and February of this year, when I was just looking at last year's Facebook page, and I started to see some of the reactions and the responses of people when they'd been home for 2 months, and starting to work out what this reverse culture shock was like, and trying to work through that. And some of the things that we've talked about already this morning, like the loneliness and the misunderstandings, were really real to people. And so I wrote down some of the thoughts I'd had on reverse culture shock and helping people come home, really from the experience of just helping some of these people come back from these mission trips. And I put it on the Facebook page, last year. And I think a number of people found it very, very helpful. And so I just want to work through that with you this morning. And the full notes are on my website, so you can download them later on. And the notes from yesterday about the season of shaking, they're on the website as well. A few weeks ago, I spent an afternoon with someone who did INS in 2008. And she, I know her parents quite well, and they were saying to me, they were saying that their daughter is really, really passionate about living and growing in this revelation of the Father. And so I said, well, would she talk to me? And so I spent an afternoon with her a few weeks ago, and she had such wisdom about coming home from INS. And I said to her, how is it? It's 8 years ago since you did INS. And she said, every year gets better and better. And I thought, yes, that's what I want it to be. And so I just wrote down a whole lot of the things, and she and I have written another sort of like paper, if you like, another little article, and that's on the website as well. And I'm going to cover some of those things that she said a little bit later on this morning. But when you come home, you think you're going home. You think you're going back to what is familiar and what is comfortable and what you've known for maybe 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And you think, your automatic response is, oh, I'm going home, everything's going to be okay. There's one problem. It's actually a good problem. But the problem is, over the last 3 months, you've changed. And you are not going home the same person that you were 3 months ago. And there's been various degrees of change. Each one of us has our own journey. Each one of us will have changed differently. There's no one size fits all. There's no formula. There's no methodology. But each one of you is going back home different. And one of the things you will discover when you go back home is it doesn't feel quite like the home that you left, because it feels so different because of the change that's taken place in you. See, what was familiar and what was routine will not be familiar, and you may not want it to be routine in the future. And so you kind of go home, and you might go back to the same house that you lived in. You might live with the same people that you lived with. You might go back into your same job or your same community, but it might feel very unfamiliar to you. And that can be a real shock, because you're going home and you're going back to what you've been in for a number of years maybe, and in your mind you think it will be familiar and okay, but you suddenly find that you feel a bit like a fish out of water. You feel like a foreigner. You feel like a stranger. And that can be a real challenge for you in many, many different ways. And, how we respond to that is we can respond in many different ways. We can go back home and we can be misunderstood, and that misunderstanding of us can cause us to become angry or bitter. And because we're trying to be, suddenly we feel like we have to build defenses around us, because there's all these sort of arrows being thrown at us, and it's like, we don't like this, people are judging us. And we can become very defensive. And actually, I don't believe that's the response the Father wants from us. Because our hearts have opened, and he wants us to live with an open heart. And he wants us to live with an, with that heart that is always open to him and open to other people. But we have to guard our heart. And I think we make a mistake sometimes between guarding our heart and closing our heart. Guarding our heart is not the same as a closed heart. You know, a guarded, when we guard our heart, we are protecting the good that Father has done in our heart, and we are preventing the bad and negative things coming into our heart. When we close our heart, we keep the rubbish in and the good out. You know, they are completely the opposite. And I want you to go home with an open heart, but a heart that you protect. Keep the good in and keep the rubbish out. If you start to close it down again, what will happen is you'll keep the rubbish in and you'll stop the good coming in. So go home and guard your heart. Protect it. Keep it open, but protect it. See, for many of us, what we're going to go home to that was our routine before and may have been life to us in some way before is going to feel like death to us because of the change that's taken place in our hearts. What was, you know, maybe what we were involved with will suddenly feel like religion or legalism. And, you know, it's like we want the new wine of the Father's love, but we're just not quite sure what it looks like in the environment we're going back to. And, you know, in a way we feel like we're in sort of a limbo state, if you understand what I mean. It's like we miss the excitement and the newness, if you like, of INS. We miss the newness of this experience. And in our hearts, we don't want to go back to Egypt. But we don't know what the promised land looks like. And we need to have a pathway that will lead us into that promised land. Because we've tasted something good over these last few months. It might have been hard. It might have been a struggle. You know, there might have been stuff that the Father's taken us through. But we've tasted life. And we've had a glimpse of the promised land, but we don't know how to get there. And suddenly, instead of being with a group of 50 or 60 people, we're on our own. And this journey that we've started together, or this journey that maybe we've come into and continued together, suddenly we have to carry on our own. And I know from experience that's a lonely place. And it's very easy to lose heart and be discouraged. And, you know, I hope I can help us find a few keys to keep living in love and living in the revelation of being loved and allowing our lives to be rooted and grounded in him. See, you are going to miss... Some of you are going to be glad to be out of here, but you are going to miss the sense of community. You're going to miss the sense of belonging, the sense of a shared experience and identity. You know, instead of this sense of belonging, you're going to feel alone. Instead of the sense of community, you're going to feel isolated. Instead of a shared experience, you're going back to survival and independence. And so you get all these questions that will start to pop up in your mind. You know, was it really worth it? You know, did God really say? Did I really change? You know, why don't people understand me? Can't people, why can't they see that I'm different? You know, why can't they see that I'm changed? Why don't my family and friends get it? And that was some of the questions that were coming up this morning. And they are really, really real questions that we will go through. You know, many of us over the next few months will go through some of those questions. And as we go through those questions, we want to find Father in them, in the answers. Because if we don't find Father, then we're just going to become discouraged. And, you know, we have to find that pathway where we can walk with Father in our daily lives and live as sons and daughters in whatever place he puts us, with whatever job he gives us, whichever community he gives us, however it works out for us. You know, we want to be able to find Father in our daily lives. A number of you will feel like when you leave here, you've gone through a bereavement because you've lost something that's become very precious to you. And bereavements hurt, don't they? You know, when we've lost a loved one, it hurts. You know, and we often think about those that we've lost. You know, and a bereavement is very, very painful. And it is like a bereavement leaving here. And every bereavement, we need time to recover. You know, you can't suddenly lose someone you love and get back into normal life straight away. You need to take time to grieve. You need to have time to process in your heart what has happened over these last few months. Because it will, for many, many of us, it will feel like a bereavement. And you will feel the pain of that and the longing of that. And you think, oh, I wish I could see, you know, my roommate again. You know, you might have had some times over these last 3 months where you wish they weren't your roommate. But there'll be that, like, oh, I wish I could see them again. I wish I could sit down with them. I wish I could talk to them. You know, I wish I could share my heart with them again. And, you know, that is a bereavement. It's very, very real. And I just, you know, as we go through that, we need to give ourselves time to let that process work in our hearts. We've talked a bit about church this morning. Church is a really difficult thing. Do you know, God loves the church. And they're his sons and daughters. And they're our brothers and sisters. And we've seen something. We've tasted of something. And we're going to go back having had this sort of wow experience of the love of the Father. And many of our churches have just been carrying on in the same old way for the last 3 months. And they're going to be plodding along doing the same old things that they were always doing. And you're going to come back in and they can misunderstand us, but we can misunderstand them just as much. And over the last 30 years, a lot of my professional life, I've spent advising churches and charities. You know, I've been their accountant, I've been their advisor. I've worked with many, many churches of all different denominations in the UK. And I can honestly say, I have never, ever met a pastor who deliberately set out to be controlling or manipulating. I've never met a pastor whose plan it was to impose a set of rules on his people. I've never met a pastor who wanted to create a legalistic framework. You know, and it's very, very easy for us to go back home to our churches and to judge them. And to criticize them. And to point the finger and go, orphan, orphan, wrong tree, wrong tree. Do you know, the moment we do that, we're barking up the wrong tree ourselves. And I want to encourage you to go home and love your church. and love your pastors and love your leaders. They may not get it, but you know, that doesn't matter. It's not your responsibility to make them get it. Fiona and I planted a church 25 years ago. And we led it for many, many years with another couple. And then we had another pastor who was really, really great. And we loved him, and he just was so open to this revelation. And he loved James, and we would always have James coming to our church. And we had a great season of about 3 years of just the love of the Father being sown into our church. And then the pastor we had moved on to another church, and we had this young guy straight out of university come and lead our church. You know, he's a nice guy, but he didn't get it. And it got to the stage in the church where the house group that Fiona and I were leading, everybody wanted to join. I get that. I understand that. But, you know, everybody wanted to be in our house group because I guess there was a little bit of life around, and we were talking about the love of the Father. We were praying for people. We were seeing people's lives touched and changed. And at that stage, there were three of us who were elders in the church. The pastor didn't get it. The other couple who were elders, they didn't get it. And there was just this tension amongst us. And I had a really, really clear dream one night that was just so, it was just as clear as anything. And I knew it was time for Fiona and I to leave the church, which we'd planted. We had a lot of really, really good friends in the church. And we just knew it was time to move on and do something different. And I realized at that point in time that I needed to be really, really careful, because I could see the church splitting. And I could see a lot of people wanting to come with us, and I could see a lot of people wanting to stay with the other two couples. And that was the last thing I wanted. Church splits don't do anyone any good. You know, they just cause a lot of pain and division and bitterness. It takes years and years to heal. So I didn't want that. So Fiona and I decided that we would leave, but we were going to leave and make sure we kept good relationships with everybody. So we told our house group one week that we were going to leave and we would stop leading the house group. And then we started to tell our friends. And then we started to tell the other leaders in the church. And apart from this other couple on the eldership, we kept relationship with everybody in the church. And it was our priority in that season. And this other couple were really angry with us. And there was one time Fiona went into the town, and she saw this other lady on the street, and the other lady crossed the road to get away from her. It's like, why? And that was painful for us, because we'd worked with these people. They were friends. About 3 years ago, this couple moved out of our town, and they moved to another part of the UK. And 2 nights before they moved house, I went to see them. And I went to see them. I took them a card to wish them well in their new home. And I just said to them, you know, I've really appreciated you. You know, because there were so many times they had wisdom for us as our kids were growing up. You know, and there were so many times, like if Fiona was unwell or something, or there was a lot of pressure in the family, they were the ones that came and helped us. You know, so we'd work together, we'd shared a lot together, but just somehow they didn't get it, and they couldn't cope with us leaving, and they were very, very angry with us about leaving the church. And, you know, I just went to them a couple of days before they moved, and I said, thank you for all that you've done for us. And, you know, I just bless you and I wish you well. And I put my arms around them and gave them a big hug. And, you know, they acknowledged something that evening. And it was really, really precious. You know, so when we left the church, somebody else, one of the other leaders in the group of churches, came up to us. He came to see me in my office. And he said, Mark, he said, will you reconsider? He said, I can't see any reason why I would ever leave the church because I am committed in relationship to these people. And I said, yeah, I'm committed in relationship to these people. Relationship is not the issue. But this is what God has put in my heart. And it was a really difficult time. And there will be that misunderstanding. You will misunderstand them. They will misunderstand you. But church is the best we've got. Yeah, and God loves the church. And so I think sometimes we don't do ourselves any favors by being critical. You know, we don't do any favors by saying, I've got this wonderful revelation and you haven't, na, 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 na. You know, that doesn't do us any good. You know, and one of the things that really, really saddens me as I travel around and talk to church leaders is they keep saying to me is, you're telling people not to go to church. And I'm thinking, no, I'm not. You know, I never say that. And I understand that, you know, God sows something into our hearts and we see something and we don't want to be part of an orphan-hearted church. We don't want to be under an orphan-hearted set of rules and regulations. I get that. I know that. But it's going to be a real challenge for you. And I just want to encourage you to walk through it in faith. And I want to encourage you to walk through it with grace. But most of all, I want you to walk through it with love. You know, the verse that always strikes me is when Jesus said to his disciples, you know, by this shall all men know that you're my disciples, when you love one another. You know, and I don't think the church is very good at loving one another sometimes. And I just really, really encourage you as you go home is to love the people that you're part of. You know, forget the misunderstandings, just love them. And the other thing I really encourage you to do as you go back to your church is find a place of community. Find people who are hungry. See, when we left our church, we met together with a small group of people that grew, and it attracted people from other churches, and we did it for 3 years. And it wasn't a formal house group of any church. It was just a group of friends meeting together. And every Wednesday evening, we would have a meal together. And then we would just share life amongst us. And, you know, this meal, this was an absolute miracle. Because we never organized the menu or the food. We just said to everyone, just bring something. And every week we had a 3-course meal. And every week people would bring different things. There was only 1 week out of the 3 years when everybody bought desserts. So do you know what we did? We went to the fish and chip shop. Bought some fish and chips and then stuffed ourselves on desserts afterwards. But that was. I saw a couple of people a few months ago who'd been part of that group, and they said that was an amazing season for them. You know, they're now in another church in Abingdon. They're still really good friends of ours. And they said those 3 years were so important for them. And we just got together as a group of friends and shared life. And I just encourage you to find a group of friends that you can share life with. You don't need permission to do it, by the way. You can just do it. You're allowed to have friends into your home. You don't need to ask permission to do that. It's not a formal church event, it's just a group of friends gathering to have life. See, life attracts life, and life causes life to grow. And, you know, as you go home, finding a group of people that you can relate to helps with the loneliness. It helps with the walk, you know, this journey that we're trying to walk out on our own, that we suddenly find we've got other people that we can walk the walk with and talk the talk with. And so I just really encourage you to do that. In whatever way, it might not be getting together and having a meal, it might be going down to the gym or whatever, it might be meeting for coffee at lunchtime, just find something that works and do it. And just, you know, people whose hearts are open to what you're carrying and what you've got. And also, you know, be open to what they've got in their heart as well. It's not a one-way street. You know, we can receive from other people and have that heart to receive from other people on out of the richness of their journey as well. See, one of the things I encourage people to do when they go home is to try something new. Take up a new sport. Take up a new hobby. Take up a new area of creativity. Because you've gone back to something that was familiar. You know, you thought it was going to be familiar, and you've gone back to it, and it suddenly feels very foreign. So one of the things you can do, rather than falling back into doing everything like you used to do it, is find something new to do. You know, it might even be walking to work on a different route or driving the car a different way. It might, you know, it just might be little things. It might be even rearranging your desk at work or rearranging your living room at home or your bedroom. But make something new as an expression of this new journey that you're going on. You know, otherwise you just fall back into all of the old traditions that you've established. But just look for little ways. You might have a favorite photograph that you've taken here. Well, get it framed and stick it on your wall. And just, you know, do something new. Keep the memories alive and, you know, just try not to settle back into the way everything was before you came here. You know, because that keeps a sort of momentum in a forwards direction. If you haven't got a job and you can't find a job, take some voluntary work. Ooh, that's a shock. I know you won't get paid for it. But let me tell you a secret. It doesn't have to be voluntary work for the church. You know, it can be voluntary work for a local charity or a local organization. It might even be voluntary work for a church that you don't go to. You know, a few years ago, Fiona's never really had a full-time paid job. I have to be really careful how I say this. She's always worked, but she's never had a paid job. And a few years ago, she kind of got to the stage thinking, you know, what am I going to do next? And she really loves gardening, and she really loves being outside. And so there's a local conservation charity in our town that works on this bit of land, a bit of forestry, and they got lambs and sheep and all sorts of things. And she went and volunteered for them for about 2 years, just working out in the fields, doing fencing and hedging and all sorts of stuff, you know, and she loved it. It was real, real life to her. Yeah. Just recently, in the last couple of years, you know, she was wondering what was next, and she's now training puppies for blind people. You know, it's a full-time job. We have little Gareth now, who's 11 weeks old, and is an absolute cutie. And before that, we had Vivi, who next week is going to work for a blind person, you know, full-time. And it's a full-time job as far as Fiona's concerned. It's full-on from very early in the morning to very late at night. You know, she doesn't get paid for it, but it gives her life. You know, and find something, do it, enjoy it, love it. Do you want to see the pictures later? Yeah. You know, there's a lot of good things that you can be involved with in your community. And don't sit on your backside waiting for your perfect job to drop through the letterbox. You know, get out there and do something. Just because it does you good, you know, and it feeds something in you. And it's you know, do something that gives you life. Whatever it is. You know, there's so much creativity in this room. I mean, we've seen just these small expressions of creativity in these pictures and things. There's an incredible amount of creativity here. You know, find something that sets your heart alive and do it. Yeah, and as well as finding something new, it's also quite good for us to find something that we're comfortable with as well. Because that gives us a bit of stability in it, and it grounds us again. You know, they can be like an anchor. You know, when everything else is uncertain and unsettled, going back to something that we enjoy doing, that we're familiar with, can give us a little bit of an anchor in our life and a little bit of stability. Don't go back to the old legalism routines that don't give you life, but find something that gives you life and let it be a little bit of an anchor for you, because those sort of things just help keep us, you know, when everything else is changing. But, you know, the most important thing, I think, is to live in the now. Live in the now. It's my friend's word. You know, it's easy to hang on to the past and it's easy to look forward to the future, and they can both be very unsettling. But live in the now of what Father has for you. See, faith is the belief and knowledge that the things we hope for will happen. You see, faith is drawing the future into the present. And as we live in the now, we can grab hold of things in faith and pull them into our present reality. Stay connected with one another. You know, Skype, Facebook, FaceTime, text, whatever. Just keep connected with one another. Because you've had a shared experience, and keep living in it. Our heart is so important. You know, we want to. We've opened our hearts, and we want to keep an open heart. We want to keep asking the Father to pour His love into our hearts. He doesn't pour His love into our minds in the hope that one day it will drop to our hearts. You know, people say this is the longest journey from the head to the heart. And it's like, oh, I've got it in my head. I wish it would drop into my heart. Well, you're asking the wrong question. You're wasting your time. It doesn't go that way. It goes directly into your heart. God pours His love into our hearts through the Holy Spirit. And one day it will come out of our mind. That's the way it works. So keep coming back to Father and saying, Father, I just need more of You. You can pray that little prayer. Can you remember it? That will do. Yes. Father, fill me with Your love now, please, if you're British. You see, you can pray that little prayer as you walk around through the day, as you go to your offices, your shops, your factories, standing at the sink, driving the car, having a shower, you know, whatever. Father, fill me with Your love now. Father, pour Your love into my heart. We just need to keep asking and coming to that place of being filled. We found this pearl of great price. We found the treasure in the field. You know, is it worth everything to us? The article I put on the website, I called Coming Home. And I called it Coming Home for two reasons. The first is obvious, we're going home. We're going back to our families, our friends, we're going back to something, you know, an environment that's familiar, maybe. But the second reason is the homecoming of our hearts. Is keep bringing your heart home. Sonship is within you. Sonship is the realization that God has always been your father and you have always been his son or daughter. Sonship is knowing that you are continually being loved by the perfect and complete love of the Father. Sonship is knowing that he is being a father to you. See, I think I've said this week, but for me, the revelation of God being my father was those two little words, to you. 2 Corinthians 6:18, Paul writes, I will be a father to you. And when, see, I knew the first bit of that verse, I will be a father. You know, I read it, I knew it, and that was my relationship with God. It's like he was a father. But when the power of those two words, I will be a father to you, when they came into my heart, it changed everything. And I believe it changes everything, you know, for us when we understand and we receive the power of those two words. You know, I will be a father to you. He will be a father to you. He is being a father to me. I've told some of you this story already this week, but one time I was in a church office. I was doing their accounts, and I was sitting at the desk doing all the money bits, you know, and the church office staff were there. And the pastor of the church, who was someone I knew quite well, he came in and he sat on the side of one of the desks and he said, it's happened again. And I couldn't help myself. He wasn't talking to me, but I couldn't help myself. I said, what's happened again? And he told me they had a church in a small town, and there was a young man in that community. He wasn't part of the church, but there was a young man in that community whose hobby was to make girls pregnant. And he had fathered 16 children. And that doesn't take account of any abortions that had happened. There were 16 kids that had been born. So biologically, he was the father of 16 children. You know, and as those kids grew up, they could say to their mum, hey mum, who is my dad? And she could say, it's that guy. This is his name. But he had fathered them biologically. He was the father of them, but he hadn't been a father to them. And I know that's a shocking story, but many of us, we know that God is a father, but we haven't allowed him to father us. We haven't allowed him to be a father to us. And I believe the revelation we need to take away in our hearts is that he is a father to us. And that the word, the power of those words would change our lives forever. And that's, you know, living in sonship is knowing that he is a father to me. Because that changes everything. And it's really, you know, I've explained a little bit about our church situation and that it was a few years ago. And the longing in my heart as I talked to my fellow leaders and friends was that God would be a father to them as well. And they would say, yeah, we know God's a father. And I would push them, but do you know he is a father to you? You know, and that's where the subject got changed. But that's the longing of my heart, is that people would actually get it. Those two little words, that I am a father to you. And if we can take that away and live in that revelation and live in that, that will change our lives. Because we've suddenly, you know, we're not like those 16 kids knowing about a father, but we really know because we're experiencing. See, you're all going to go away from this time. You know that I'm a father. You know that I've got 4 kids. I can tell you all the stories about what we've done in our family and all the great things we've done and all the fantastic holidays. And you can go away thinking, Mark's a really, really good dad. But there's only 4 people in the world that I am a father to. And that's my kids. See, we can learn all about God. We can learn all about God being a father. But that's not the same as knowing he is being a father to us. It's way, way, way different. And when that revelation, when the light comes on, it goes, oh, God, you really are my father. It changes everything. Our sonship's not based on our performance or activity. It's not something we earn, it's a gift. You know, we all know that salvation is through Jesus alone, don't we? But we then think that we have to work it out through a gospel of works. And that, you know, that's not going to cut it for us anymore. That's not going to work for us anymore when we go here, because sonship is not based on a gospel of works. Sonship is based on a gospel of relationship. It's the good news of the Father's love being poured into our heart. We continually need to hear the Father say to us, you are my beloved son, you are my beloved daughter. We need to keep coming back to him and saying, Father, just tell me again. Just tell me again. And just ask him to speak those words of affirmation into our heart. Your son, you're my beloved son. I love you. You're my beloved daughter. I love you. And we need to keep asking him to speak those words into our heart. It's going to be an exciting journey. I just want to read 3 different verses and then we'll stop and have a break. And then I want to come and go through some of the things that this girl was sharing with me from her experience of being here a few years ago. This is a sort of combination of verses. I think you're allowed to do that. I've done it. See what kind of love the Father has lavished on us. He loved us so much that he gave his one and only Son, so that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. And those who receive him and believe in his name are given the right to become children of God, for that is who we are. He is wooing you from the jaws of distress to a spacious place free from restriction, to the comfort of your table laden with choice food. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me, work with me, watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Do you know what? That's what I want to do. I want to live freely and lightly. And the way we live freely and lightly is to walk in sonship. Is to walk knowing that he is being a father to us and he's loving us every day. Let's take a break for 10, 15 minutes.